Morning, everybody. Before I begin, I'd like to first apologize for the confusion last week. I got sick towards the weekend last week, and therefore I really didn't know until I was planning until after Shabbos to give the shiur, but I was in bed most of Shabbos, and when I made Havdalah close to midnight, that was the first ability I had to make Havdalah. I knew that it wasn't gonna happen. So for those, I think the word got out, but for those, thank you. For those who, I believe there were a few people who did not get the message and came, I apologize. I apologize for that. Again, I'd like to thank everybody for coming all these weeks. And of course, a big yasher koyach to Mr. Harvey Lichtman for all of his efforts. You can see this morning, ran out. Yeshiva is a little compromised now, as you may have realized, because of construction that's taking place in the Beis Medrash, and also the Talmidim of the Beis Medrash are not here, so therefore things were not exactly the way I thought they would be when we scheduled the shiur for this date, but nevertheless, the show must go on. So I thought we would end off speaking about something, a very important mitzvah, which we find in the parasha yesterday, in the first parasha, and that is that in parasha's Matos, so the parasha really speaks in three, there are three different topics in parasha's Matos. The first of them speaks about the laws of Nedarim. The last of them speaks about the discussion, the negotiation between the two and a half Shvatim, the B'nai Gadim, the B'nai Ruvain, with Moshe Rabbeinu to negotiate the land on the other side, on the east bank of the Jordan River. And the middle section has a great deal of bearing on practical halacha, and that is, it speaks about the conquest of Midian, the fact that Hashem commanded Moshe to go and exact revenge for the Bnei Yisrael against Midian. And the Torah proceeds to say that as a result of this of the war that they fought against Midian, there was a tremendous amount of materials that were captured, and the Torah takes a few psukim, not many, but a few psukim to discuss what should be done with the vessels that were captured from Midian. So if you look at the sheet, we have here in Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, so the Torah says that Vayomer Elazar Hakohen El Anshei Hatzava Abam LaMelchama. So Elazar, who was the leader, the other than Moshe, was the leader at that time because his father Aaron had passed away. So he commanded the soldiers, the people from the army who came back, and told them Zos Chukas HaTorah Asher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe, that these are the laws that Hashem commanded Moshe. And he said, Ach es hazov, ve es hakesef, es hanechoshes, es habarzel, es habdil ve es hofaris. He listed off the following materials. He said, gold and silver. Okay, that's zov and kesef. Nechoshes and barzel are translated copper and iron. Bedil ve hofaris, tin and lead. These six items. Kol davar asher yavo ba'esh, any such material that can go into fire, meaning that can be used for the purpose that can be used in heat, it could be used for cooking or something along those lines. Taviru ba'esh b'toher. So that has to be purged in order to get out what we call that which is absorbed in those vessels. So they go into fire, they have to be purged with fire. Okay, which is where we get the halacha of kashering, right? The halacha of kashering kelim is derived essentially from this pasuk. Obviously this is very brief, but the idea being that the way the taste, we follow the tradition that when you cook, it's a practical reality that when you cook in a vessel, the taste of what you're cooking gets absorbed into the vessel. And therefore, if a person cooked non-kosher food in a pot, so the pot would have, even if the pot was cleaned out, completely washed and cleaned out, but nevertheless it would still have the taste of the non-kosher item. So in order to get that out, the Elazar told them that you have to It has to be undergo, it has to be purged in fire. And by doing that, you will get out, remove the taste which is absorbed into it, and then the vessel will now be kosher. Okay, that's the first halacha he said to them. But then he continued and said, "Ach b'mei nido yischato." However, it also needs something else, right? Now, what exactly this means? So Rashi says, "Ach b'mei nido yischato," that this would refer to that if you want to remove it from its tumah, meaning let's say it came into contact with tumas mace. Right, these items became tameh, especially they were captured in the war, there were a lot of mesim involved. So, for that, it would also have to be submerged in a mikveh. It would have to be submerged in a mikveh. Okay, v'chol asher lo yavo ba'esh taviru b'mayim. And anything that did not go into fire, meaning anything that was not used for cooking purposes, for example, Rashi says cups, plates, things like that, Taviru b'mayim, that has to be passed through water. Now, what does it mean, Taviru b'mayim? So here there is a difference of opinion amongst the Rishonim, but we'll go with Rashi's pshat. Rashi here says, Taviru b'mayim, the last Rashi, or the second to last Rashi on the page, Rashi says, Matvilo v'dayo, that you immerse it, you are tovel it in a mikveh, and that's enough. Which means, the way we have the halacha, not everybody agrees that's what the pasuk is saying. The Ramban says he doesn't think it means that. He thinks it just means that you just have to rinse it off if it was not used for cooking. But the fact of the matter is, the consensus as it comes to the halacha is that this pasuk is taken to mean, like Rashi, that you have to, that when it comes to vessels that are acquired from a non-Jew, so basically there are two halachas. There's a halacha of kashering, right, which means that if the guy used it, you would have to, if a guy sold you a used pot, so you would have to kasher it. It would not be enough to just clean it out and say, well, okay, it's empty now. He may have cooked chazer in it last week, but right now there's nothing in it. That's not enough. You have to kasher it. That's halacha number one. But on top of that, even if it was not used for cooking, nevertheless, it still requires taviru b'mayim. Taviru b'mayim, the pasuk says, it has to pass through water. What does that mean? Says Rashi, the Masorah, pshat in these words, that it has to be immersed in a mikveh. So therefore, if you got a pot from a guy that was used, you would have to kasher it and immerse it in a mikveh. If you got a pot from a guy that was unused, or, for example, if you got a different type of vessel which did not require kashering, right, because it was not used with heat, for example, a cup, right, so then the halacha would be that taviru b'mayim, it has to be immersed in a mikveh, okay? And this is the basis for the din of tefillas kelim, which we have. And we know the halacha that the person who acquires a keli from a non-Jew, even if it was unused, which is typically the way we do it, you go to a store and you buy a set of pots or whatever it may be, the halacha is that these kelim, cutlery, these kelim have to be immersed in a mikveh in order to be used. Yeah, I'm sorry.
How do we know that this
Yeah.
It means
right.
Nowadays, you don't have
right. So, right. So, well, the first part of the pasuk, the first part of the pasuk, taviru ba'esh v'tahar, has nothing to do with tumah and tahara, because there is no concept of removing tumah through purging something in heat, right? So that for sure is not that would be undebated. The second part of the pasuk could be debated. The second part of the pasuk, Rashi himself says that ach b'mei nido yischata could mean to remove the tumah, but nevertheless the chazal, the we'll see in a second, the Gemara and the Maseches Avodah Zarah came to the belief that this pasuk is saying, the Masorah that we have is that this pasuk is telling us that it has to undergo a tefillah, and it's also in a sense for a tumah, but not for the tumah that you're referring to, not the tumah's mace per se, but for a different type of tumah, which we'll soon see. So the now just to take note, the pasuk here does refer to the word b'mei nidoi yischata, which means that the reference here is the waters. You know, it could be interpreted to mean the waters of the Nida. Mm-hmm. So from this pasuk, the derivation is that to be tovel kalim, it has to be done in a mikveh that is kosher for a tefillah of a woman. Okay, now we know that there are different standards. Men have the minhag in our times also. Some people go for tefillah at different times. But there is a stricter standard, the mikveh that is kosher for a woman to remove the status of nida, and therefore that is the only form of mikveh that is kosher for tefillas kelim. Okay, it has to be such a thing. So therefore, a swimming pool, which some people will tell you that, you know, those who go to the mikveh on Friday or before Yontif or before Yom HaNoraim or whatever it may be, the men who go, so some have the practice that they shut off the filter in the pool so that the water stands still, it's not moving, and that would constitute a valid tefillah for men. But that would not, under any circumstances, constitute a valid tefillah for women. And therefore, that type of body of water would not be acceptable for tefillas kelim. For tefillas kelim, one has to go to a kosher mikveh, so or the ocean or things like that. But you know, we should just be aware of this. That sometimes there's confusion. You hear people before Rosh Hashanah, before Yom Kippur, they didn't have a chance to go to the mikveh. You call somebody, they say, "Well, go, you know, go into your pool, shut the filter, and you could use that." That's true. But that's true for a man, that's not true for a woman, and that would not be true memela for tefillas kelim. So anyway, this is what we find. This is what we find in the psukim. Now, moving forward, we have the Mishnah. If you turn over the page, so at the very end of Maseches Avodah Zarah, the last Mishnah tells us halokea klei tashmish min ovdei kochavim. So it says that one who buys vessels that are used from goyim, so as shedarko lahatfil yatfil. Okay, those that require only a tefillah, so one should do tefillah for. Okay, for example, a cup. Okay, as lahagil yagil lulabein ba'or yulabein ba'or. Okay, now we know that the Mishnah is telling us that when it comes to kashering kelim, when it comes to kasher kelim, we know there are different types. There are essentially two types of ways to kasher kelim. One of them is what we call hagola, right, where you pour boiling water over it. It's removed that way. The other is where it actually has to go in directly with fire. So the Mishnah is telling us that if one buys kelim from a guy, so he has to assess the status and do what's needed. Comes the Gemara right at the beginning, skip down two lines, says the Gemara, Tana, v'kulon tzrichin tefillah b'arboimsa, that all kelim must be immersed in arboimsa, in a mikveh of 40 sa. In other words, it makes no difference what it was, whether it was a pot, or whether it was a fork, or whether it was a cup, whether it was something that needed libun, or whether it was something that needed hagola, or if it was something that needed neither. Nevertheless, everything has to be immersed in a mikveh. Okay, so this is the halacha that we follow, that all kelim have to be immersed in a mikveh. Now, why is this? Why should there be such a halacha? So in the Yerushalmi, we find, it's not here in the Gemara, but we find in the Yerushalmi, the Chazal say, "Lufi sheyatzu mitumas hagoyim v'nichnasu l'kdushas Yisrael." The Chazal say the reason why we have to immerse kelim in a mikveh has nothing to do with the kashering. The kashering, this is often confused, that's why I'm repeating it. The kashering of kelim is to remove the taste that's absorbed in it. But that would only apply to a vessel that had previously been used. But if you went to the store and bought a brand new pot, so there's nothing in it, it was unused. So that you would not need to kasher. Nevertheless, you would have to immerse it in a mikveh because yatzu meitumas hagoyim v'nichnasu l'kedushas Yisrael. Because it went out, it is now having an aliyah, it is having an elevation, it is going out from the tumah of being in the possession of the goyim, and entering into the Kedushas Yisrael. Now a Jew has it, so when a Jew has it, it's on a higher status. It's entering the Kedushas Yisrael, and therefore, almost in a certain sense, it sounds funny to say this, but almost in a sense, when a person converts, if a person converted to Judaism, they would have to go into a mikveh. Why? That's part of the process. So again, we could say this idea, because they're leaving a certain status and entering into a higher status. So too, when you acquire for use a keli from a guy, it would have to be, it has to undergo the same process. This is what we're told. And again, this speaks to the whole union of kashrus, the fact that when a person eats, he's not just eating the food like an animal does, but we believe that the food that a person eats also sustains his neshama, not just sustains his guf. I mentioned once the Kabbalistic idea of Chaim Vital, that the food that a person eats also affects his neshama. That's what keeps his neshama alive. And therefore, there is a certain status, there's a certain kedusha that's involved in eating. And to take something from a guy and just to turn it over and use it would not be appropriate. So therefore, this is the halach. Yes.
So if a Jewish pot maker
right.
pot,
right.
I purchased the pot directly from the Jewish pot.
You would not have to. Correct. That's correct. So the correct that assumption from this is, right, what we could glean from this is that obviously if it came from a Jew, if it was made by a Jew, manufactured by a Jew, you would not have this stat, you would not have this issue. And that's why if you buy a keli and you want to take it to a mikveh to immerse it, so, you know, we know that the tefillah of kelim involves making a bracha, it's a mitzvah, we say the bracha, but if you suspect, you know, sometimes you're not sure who did it come from, right? So I guess if it was made in Israel, you could pretty safely assume it was made by a Jew. I don't know for sure, but probably you could assume it was made by a Jew. But let's say you're not sure. So the halacha would be that we would, generally speaking, we would immerse it, but we would not say a bracha on that. Because of the fact that you would immerse it misafik because you don't know. But on the other hand, since you don't know, you don't say a bracha. So, but if you know for sure it comes from a Jew, you do not have to be told. That is correct. It's based on who made it. It's based on who made it. Now, if it was made by a guy and a Jew bought it and then sold it to you, that if you own a hardware store, let's say you own the Bed Bath and Beyond, right? So that would not make it. That's not good enough. In other words, if you own the place, right? If you own the place, yeah, exactly how it works, the ins and outs of the halacha, I'm not 100%. Sure, exactly, you know, all the technicalities of it. But yeah, if you made the pot, you would not have to be tovel it. A person would not have to be tovel it. On the other hand, if a guy made the pot and you were the wholesaler or the retailer or whatever, then you would have to be tovel it. That's the way that law is. Okay, now, in terms of, yeah, I'm sorry.
Is that because you suspect the guy of Avodah Zarah?
No. It has nothing to do with Avodah Zarah. No, this is therefore even today, when most goyim are not involved in the avodah zara, many are not. So you would still have to do a tefillah. Okay, now in terms, so what requires tefillah? Now, if you look at the psukim in the Torah, so the Torah here was very specific. The Torah listed off six elements. The Torah said zav and kesef, gold and silver, and the nechoshes and barzel is copper and iron. And Bedil El Faris is translated tin and lead. So it's very clear that those are the things. So what would be if it was made out of wood? So you would not have to be tovlet. Okay? Now what would be if it was made out of glass? So based on the psuk, based on this pasuk, you would also not have to be tovlet. Right? Because the Torah here was very specific. The Torah did not just say anything that you buy from a guy has to be immersed. It doesn't say that. It listed off six specific elements. These six elements are all metals, right? That these are the things that a person has to immerse in a mikveh. Nothing else. Yet we know that we have, the halacha has always been, I mean, since rabbinic times, the halacha has always been that we also are tovel glass. Now, why is that? So, if you look at the Gemara here, the Gemara says, if you go, I'm sorry, I didn't mark it off, about the five lines before the lines get wide. In other words, further down on the page, about five lines before it gets wide, says the Gemara at the end of the line, Amar Ravashi. So Ravashi says, Hani klei zechuchis, these glass kelim, hoel since v'chin ishtabru, that if they break, yesh lahen takona, they can still be salvaged, kikli matchis damu. They are treated, we treat them the same as metal. Which means like this, which means that glass really is not one of the elements mentioned in the Torah and therefore should not require a tefillah. However, the Rabbanan came along and said that glass has a similar property to the metals mentioned in the Torah, and that is because if it breaks, it could still be salvaged. You could melt it down and remake it. You could take the broken glass and reconfigure it into something else. And, you know, so, I don't know exactly the umnus, but you could take the glass and reconstitute it. And therefore, because of that, the Rabbanan said it should be treated like metal. It should be treated like metal. And therefore, we have the halacha that we would also, even though it's not mentioned in the Torah, glass is not mentioned in the Torah, nevertheless, the Gemara here says explicitly that glass, since it has similar properties to metal, the Rabbanon says should be treated like metal and should undergo tefillah as well. And this is the halacha in the Shulchan Aruch, and this is accepted to the extent that we would say a bracha, even on glass, even though it's not mentioned in the Chumash, but nevertheless, it's a din in the Gemara. The Rabbanon made the din, so like many other halachas that we say brachas on, right? It's a din to Rabbanon, but nevertheless, we say a bracha on that. Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, so the truth is, so China is a question, the ins and outs of all the materials I'd rather stay away from because I don't know myself the nature of all the materials, to be perfectly honest with you. But the basic groupings are the metals and glass. That's pretty much what everybody agrees. You know, plastic, there are those, believe it or not, there were people who argued that plastic also has this, that if it breaks you could melt it down and make it again. And therefore, there were people who held that plastic things should undergo tefillah. However, Baruch Hashem, the consensus of the poskim is not like that, and therefore it's widely held that you don't have to be tovo plastic, and things along those lines. Now, an interesting question which came up over the generations is the question of aluminum, because that is a metal which was discovered. Right, they didn't. In other words, it's not mentioned in the pasuk. However, it's something which is clearly, you know, fits from the same family. So there's a tshuva written about this. Rav Moshe Feinstein debates back and forth. He wants to make the argument that aluminum should not require tefillah min haTorah. He says because at the end of the day, it's not one of the six. On the other hand, since it has the same criteria as plastic, as glass, so therefore he says it would require a tefillah midrabbanan, which is what we do. But again, so the ones that are mechuyev midaraisa are the big six, the ones that are mentioned here in the psukim, and essentially glass and aluminum require tefillah midrabbanan, and other things would. And earthenware things and plastic and things like that. Certainly paper items do not require any tefillah at all. Right? This is the way we have it. Okay, now, getting towards the topic that I wanted to address. Now, the question that presents itself is, in our times, you know, it's very common that we have situations where people, you know, over the years, the knowledge of halacha in this country has increased tremendously, but nevertheless, not every halacha is as well known as every other one. And therefore, the laws of kashrus today are fairly well known to a lot of people, right? And the availability of kosher food and materials and so forth is, you know, is available. And it's known to people. However, tefillas kelim is harder for people because, for one thing, it requires a mikveh, right? And sometimes you could have, if a person lives in a place where there is no mikveh, you have very commonly situations where you have children of parents who aren't religious, where the parents, out of respect for the observance of the child, will say, "All right, I'll keep kosher in the house, or you know, whatever. I'll at least when you come, whatever, I'll have separate pots and I'll cook kosher for you." But the problem is that they don't know or they don't have the ability to do tefillas keilin. So now the question would be, so what happens in a situation like that? What happens, that's the point that I really wanted to discuss. What happens if a person is invited or brought to a situation where you don't know or you don't think that they tovel the keilin? So what we have to understand is like this. The first halacha that we have to know, which is very basic and a big lifesaver, is that even though there is an obligation to tovel keilin, but food cooked in non-tovel kelim does not become not kosher. Meaning, that's all negative. Meaning that if a person did not know that they had to tovel a pot, and they bought a pot from the store and cooked supper in that pot, the food remains kosher. Assuming the food that went into it was kosher, obviously, the food remains kosher. It does not become treif even though it was cooked in a non-tovel pot. Okay, there's a chiyuv to tovel the pot, but there's a chiyuv to tovel the dishes. But if the food was prepared in a pot that was not toveled, it remains kosher. So therefore, that would be a lifesaver, right? Because then you have a situation, you're invited to you don't want to offend the people, and you know, they invite you over. You know, let's say, that they don't know the laws of tefillas keilin, but they cooked the food already. Or they're going to cook the food and you can't explain it to them. So the halacha is that assuming the food was prepared kosher, it remains kosher even though it was cooked in such a pot. That's number one. Now, that is, as I say, a very big lifesaver. However, it doesn't get us completely out of the woods, because then they're going to serve it to you. So you come to the house, you say, "All right, they cooked the food. The food is all kosher." Okay, terrific. But now they're going to go ahead and put it on their dishes. And so now you're going to be using their dishes. In other words, the fact that they cook the food the way they cook the food is no problem. But as far as you're concerned, it's no problem. Mm-hmm. However, but now I have another challenge, because now I have to eat using their keilim. So I'm going to be using their forks and their knives and their spoons and their glasses and their plates, and none of this underwent tefillah. So what does a person do in a situation like this? So, that would be one solution. That would be one solution, but that's not the only solution. In other words, sometimes it's uncomfortable. So I'd like to break up the discussion into two areas. Number one, what if you're not sure? And number two, what if you're sure that they didn't do it? Okay, so first let's take the one where you're not sure. In other words, you think they might have done it. I don't know. They've heard of it. They've heard of tefillas keilim. There is a mikveh in the area that they live in. I'm just not sure. Right? This probably would come up a lot. I don't know if the people, they may not know, they may not have known the halacha that this type of thing has to be told in a mikveh, whatever it may be. So here we find a very remarkable thing, a very, very remarkable din, which seems to be the opinion of many, many Rishonim. It seems to be probably the majority opinion. And that is like this. Even though the mitzvah to tovel kelim is a mitzvah in the Torah, as we just read the psukim, it's a mitzvah in the Torah. However, to use a non-tovel kli, believe it or not, the consensus of opinion is only an issur derabbanan. Is only an issur derabbanan. Now you'll say, how in the world could that be? What do you mean? The Torah says you have to be tovel the kelim. So if the Torah says, if you weren't tovel the kelim, then you're violating a Torah law, aren't you? So there are many who say that no, that the mitzvah in the Torah to be tovel kelim means that at some point you're supposed to be tovel the kelim. You're supposed to be tovel the kelim. But what would the Torah say if you say, "Well, listen, I live 30 miles from the nearest mikveh. I can't get there. It's not possible. What am I supposed to do?" So there are those who say, believe it or not, that this is the consensus of Poskim, that you could still use it according to the Torah law. You could still use it according to the Torah law. It's only the Rabbanan who were stricter with this, and the Rabbanan came and said, I guess probably out of the concern that you may never do it, so the Rabbanan said you can't use it even once without tefillah. But midin haTorah, you could use it without tefillah. Now, how does that help? So you'll say, so good, so it still doesn't help us because so you have to keep the rabbinic laws also. I'm sorry, yeah.
A dog in the afternoon yesterday, there was tons of water coming out of the drain, of the roof.
Yeah.
Now, you're not near a kenya, you're not near a mikvah.
Right.
If you have a vat that can chop a 40 saw, can we put it under that?
You have to know the construction. You have to know how to construct the kosher mikveh. It's not the easiest thing, not the hardest thing, but not the easiest thing.
We have the mat for it.
If you made a mikveh, you have to go someone who knows well the laws of mikvahs, and you have to know what you're doing. But I'm saying you can make mikvahs in different. It's not that people they make mikvahs in different places. It's true. But I'm just saying, let's say you had no such option. Right? And you're in such a place. So the halacha would be that it's asur mid rabbanan. Not asur min hatorah, it's only asur mid rabbanan. Now how does that help? So the reason that helps is because we have a concept that we've mentioned numerous times called safek d'rabbanan l'kula. Safek d'rabbanan l'kula means that when you have a doubt in a rabbinic law, you have the right to be lenient. So therefore, it would come out that if you're not sure if the people were tovel the kelim, you have a legitimate possibility. It's not just a pipe dream. You know, if you know that they don't know anything about it, then there's no safek, then they for sure didn't do it. But if you think that they, it could be that, yeah, they know. I don't know, I'm not 100% sure if they did it. But it could be they did. So the halacha would be we say safek d'rabbanan l'kula. Now you will say, you'll say, wait a second, but maybe this shouldn't be true because safek d'rabbanan l'kula is only said in situations where there is no chazaka, in a situation where the item that is in doubt is totally neutral. Then we say safek d'rabbanan l'kula. However, if an item was bought from a guy, so there is no question that when it started out, it needed tefillah. So it had what is called a cheskas iser. It required tefillah for sure. So now, when in doubt, we should not say anymore the rule safek d'rabbanan l'kula, because it's not a pure safek. Because by the laws of the Torah, we have a concept called chazaka, that if something had a pre-existing status, in doubt, when in situations of doubt, we assume that that status continues. So therefore, you know for sure that this pot needed tefillah. That is no question. Now, your question is only, did the person do it? So it had a cheskas iser. In other words, it started out with in a status where it needed tefillah. And now, you don't know. So we shouldn't say stuff at the Rabbanu Lakula. So remarkably to this, God, yeah. Okay, so you could, so that's an interesting point. If you think that it may have come from a Jew, I don't know if that always applies, right? Maybe in some sense a svek sveka. That gets into the question if you have a svek sveka where there's a rove against one side, which is a complicated, because most of the things don't come from Jews. I'll tell you what they say though. What they say, the Aruch HaShulchan says, and this is a remarkable thing, which is also said by other people, and that is that the law of tefillah is not an iser, it's rather a mitzvah, which means that because the Torah phrases it in the positive sense, the Torah, the psukim say, "Ach b'mei nida yischato v'chashol yo taviru b'mayim." The Torah is saying it as a mitzvah. This is what you should do. There are poskim that say that most notably the Aruch HaShulchan says that this makes it that it's not like the Torah said thou shalt not use unimmersed vessels. Then it would be an iser, then it would be a losasei, and then we would say the rule of cheskas iser. However, here he wants to say a very remarkable chiddush, that here it's a question of a mitzvah, and if it's a question of a mitzvah, the law of chazaka that it's a cheska sister would not apply, and therefore on that basis he says that you could rely that the suffix Rabban Lakul would apply in such a case. So that is most, there are one or two posts that don't agree with that, but the consensus of opinion is that this is the halacha, and therefore as far as the question, if you go to a house and you're not sure if they tovel the kalim, the halacha is you could use the kalim. You could use the kalim because of the fact that it could be they did. And if it could be they did, and the prohibition of using unimmersed vessels is only midrabanan, so then we would say suffik rabbanon lakula. This is a very big, very important idea. This is something that's very important to know, which again makes it so now if you're invited to someone's house and you're not sure, so you say, first of all, the food is kosher, that's not an issue, right? Assuming, again, you have to know the food is kosher. But if you trust them as far as that is concerned, right, that those laws people are more familiar with, so you say, all right, the food is kosher and it remained kosher even if they for sure didn't tovel it's kosher. That is no shiloh, right? The only question is, can I go ahead and use those vessels? So to that we say the halacha that if it's possible that they did, suffik rabbanon lakula. This is what we say. Okay, now the bigger, I'm sorry, what's that? It's Eshul Vruy. So in other words, the question is being asked that you don't say Suffolk Rabbanu Kula if you could find it out. So I guess, okay, I should mention that if you could find it out, you should ask them. If you could find out, you should ask them. However, it's not always Eshul Vruy, right? It could be, you can get into situations where it's uncomfortable to ask. It could result in other problems. And therefore, the poskim say this, that in a situation where you're uncomfortable, it's true that we never. This is an important rule to know, that you don't say the rule of suffik lakula if you could find it out. Right? If you could easily find out, you say, well, gee, I don't know if it's kosher, and I will go find out. But if you can't find it out, so then the halacha would be that you could say suffik rabbanu lakula. Okay, now, that's all fine and good if you think they may have done it. Now, what about if in a situation where you know for sure that they weren't Tovel the Kalim? In other words, what do we say in a situation like that? So here it's a little bit stickier. So as was mentioned previously, you could say, I would like to eat on paper dishes, and that would solve the problem. That would solve the problem, but that you can't always do either. That you can't always do. So we have, I couldn't quite figure out how to copy this and attach it to the sheet that I handed out, but there is a tshuva in the Igros Moshe of Moshe Feinstein in the Chelek Yeridea where he was asked this very question, and he said something which could help a little bit. And he said that the prohibition of using unimmersed vessels is only if you're using it, meaning if you needed it. Let's say you didn't need it. So for example, let's say somebody would serve you, fruits, cut up slices of watermelon on an untoveled plate. Okay, so now you don't really, the plate is you don't need the plate to eat it. You're going to pick up the watermelon piece by piece. Let's say it was with a toothpick, okay? You're going to pick it up with a toothpick piece by piece and eat it. So therefore, you're not using the plate, right? The plate is just there, in effect, as far as you're concerned, the plate is just there for the presentation, that it shouldn't get on the table, but the plate is not something that you're really benefiting from. So therefore, he ruled that in a case of need, a solid food, not just watermelon, but any solid food could be eaten from a plate, right? Now again, you'll say, what about the fork? Okay, so the fork would be a problem also, but let's say you can eat it with your hands, okay? Someone put out a plate of fried chicken. Alright, so even if they put on your plate, right, the hostess brings out a whole tray of fried chicken, and you're going to, they pass it around, and you have a plate in front of you, you're going to put a piece of chicken on your plate. Rav Moshe Feinstein said that it's all right. That's all right, because you're not really, you don't need the plate. The plate is not helping you. This is what he says. He says here, this is in Yeridea, the third Chelek Simen Chaf Beis, he says that he's talking about eating in hotels, which is maybe get to in a minute, right, where you know that they were not Tovel the Kalim. So he says, if they put in front of a person Chatichos Basar, Munachos Agabe Kli, he says, the Einam Srichos La'etzim HaKli, you don't really need the plate. The Einam Mishtamshim Bolotzorach Achila, it's not really helping you eat it. Okay, it's just there to I guess you would say to keep things neat or for the presentation of the food. So he says that would not be considered a clay suda, and that you could use. He says you could do this b'shas adchak. He says you could do this in a situation of shas adchak. In other words, as we all realize, doesn't sound like the most convincing argument, right? But nevertheless, this is what he said. He said that in a case of need, a person could do this. If they served you a piece of cake on a plate that wasn't toveled, and you could eat it with your hands, no problem. Theoretically, if you could get a plastic fork, and you know maybe they'll give you a plastic fork, but the plates, they're using their own dishes, so then the fork is no problem, and the dish is all right. This is what he says. However, obviously, this would only apply to a solid food. If it was soup that they served, or if they served the drink in a glass, so that already, you would not have this heter. You would not have this heter. There is a heter for that, also a very controversial heter, which I don't think it made it into the mainstream, which I don't fully understand, so I'm not going to present it, but it's in the Sefer Tfilas Kalim. But I think Rav Moshe's opinion is pretty much the mainstream, which is that in such a situation, if you don't really need the item, if it's for a solid food and you're eating it with your hands or you're eating it with a plastic fork, it would be okay, right? Even a solid food, you could not eat with a fork that required tefillah. In other words, if they gave you a real fork, that you could not do. But yeah, so.
Would this apply also if you were eating in a goy's house?
So if you're eating in a goy's house, the goy's kalim don't need tefillah at all. Right, that's a halacha. The tefillah is only, like we said, because the vessel is going from a goy to a Jew. If it remains a goy's vessel, it does not require a tefillah. So therefore, if you went into a goy's house, which it would not necessarily be the easiest situation, because how do you know the food is kosher? But assuming you go to a goy and he pulls out a cake, Entenmann's cake, right? Entenmann's cake, and he puts it out on a plate. Now, if the plate is clean, you could eat it. Right? That is no shiloh. Because of the fact that a goy's kalim does not require tefillah. It's only the kalim of a Jew. So this is... I'm sorry? In a hotel, if it's a goy's kalim, it would be the same thing. If it's a Jew's kalim, it comes up the question, a hotel or a restaurant or a hospital... Right, where you could have a situation where it's a Jew's kalim, but they weren't tovel them, right? So then there is a big argument amongst the contemporary poskim. Rav Moshe Feinstein was not from the lenient ones in that shaila. Ravadi Yosef Shalom be well wrote a tshuva in which he claims, being again that the whole thing is the rabbanan, and he put together creatively a few different points and wanted to say that in a situation, he's talking about a kiosk, he refers to specifically in Eretz Yisrael, like they used to have a soda fountain back in the old days, right? You may recall when you would go into a place and ask them for a glass of soda, right? And they would give you, right? Before you had machines everywhere you turned, right? So sometimes you'd go into a candy store and ask the guy for a glass of soda back in the day. Right, so let's say it was a Jewish. Even I remember that. Right, so let's say it was a Jewish owned store. if it was a Jewish-owned store, so then there are those who argue that it's all right, because there's a halacha that merchandise that was bought for the purpose of business, not for personal use, does not require tefillah. So there's a whole question, would that apply to a person who has dishes because he's selling you food, like a restaurant owner? In other words, he's serving you the food, it's his business. So therefore, he doesn't have an obligation to be tovel lekeilim because he's not using them for himself. He's using them for his business. Now the question is, if his business is food service, does that require tefillah or not? So that this is a big argument amongst the poskim. From this tshuva and Ramosha, it's very clear that he held l'chumra on this point, but there are those who are lenient. So therefore, that already would be a question if it came up. I think, I don't know how commonly that comes up, but that would be something which a person would have to deal with. Just one other halacha that I wanted to mention when it comes to the laws of Tefillas Kelim, that the Tefillas Kelim does not, all that's required is that the thing should be immersed. It's not required, it's not a maisa mitzvah, meaning it does not require an act of immersion. It does not require an act of immersion, which would mean that if accidentally a plate, you know, let's say you go across the street, so you line up all your kelim, right, then accidentally with your elbow you knock a plate into the water, right, so sometimes it sinks to the bottom, as we see. But let's say you're able to fish it out, okay, so the halacha is that is considered tefillah, even though you did not immerse it. It fell in by itself. Now, theoretically, if it fell off of your shelf right into a mikveh, that would be kosher. Now, the ramifications of that are that, therefore, the question, commonly asked question, can a child do tefillas kelim? Right? In other words, below the age of bar bas mitzvah, do tefillas kelim. So, here it would depend, because if the act itself is an act of, if it requires an immersion, an act of immersion, so that means that it's not enough that the thing went into the water, but it had to be submerged in the water by a person who has the chiv of the mitzvah. So therefore, then it would come out that it would not be, that it would not be good. However, we hold the halacha that it does not require an act of immersion, it just needs to be immersed, and therefore, even theoretically, if a guy did it, it would be good. However, the problem with this is that you cannot trust those people to tell you that they did it, right? In other words, if you sent your kid off, if you sent your 10-year-old off to the mikveh, you know, and with a bike, you know, he goes with his bike and has the box of dishes or glasses or whatever, and say, all right, you know, go tovel lekeilim and come back. So, since the law of tefillas kelim is essentially midaraisa, so you can't trust a cotton for such a thing. So therefore, you would have a problem with that. However, if you were there supervising, and the kid, you get tired, you have a whole bunch, before Pesach, a whole bunch of kelim to be tovel, and I'm tired already, I can't do this, I want my kid to take over a little bit. So, assuming that the child knew what to do, and you were supervising it, that would be acceptable. That would be acceptable, and so too, even if a guy did it, it would be acceptable, because of the fact that if, as long as you know it was done, you see him doing it, you're watching, right? But the actual thing itself, the actual act of immersion, you are not doing, the halacha is, that's okay, because in essence, you don't need an act of immersion, you just need that the vessel should be in water, however it gets into water is fine. Yes, you're fine.